It's
called Punch Drunk.
The punches weren't really necessary. Maybe
they were super necessary.
Welcome to episode 92 of the Punch Drunk Podcast, your favorite combat sports podcast, still hosted by two dudes who can't fight and know way less about fighting than they think they do. I'm your host, Lewis, and we've got a change in the seat. As you all know, Adam stepped away from the podcast, so last episode was his last, but I am very fortunate to be joined by one of my closest friends, a longtime buddy of mine, and dedicated Punch Drunk Pod listener, Jamie Trezellian. He's been called up to the ranks. How you doing, brother? Good to see you.
Mate, good to see you as well. Big fan of the pod. Fuck you, Adam, for making me do things. But no, just happy to be here having a chat with you, mate. Sounds good.
Excellent, excellent. And I think we picked a pretty good week to bring you in, because there's no shortage of things to talk about. And really, I guess we have to start in the most obvious place to start, the biggest thing to happen on the card this weekend, and it was definitely that Blood Diamond lost his third fight inside the UFC.
Absolutely, yeah, just the chaos that was reigning, and it all started from Blood Diamond just looking like Bambi on weak knees. It wasn't his best.
He's got to be maybe the worst fucking fighter there's ever been in the UFC. And that, like, includes CM Punk and Mike Jackson. Like, I'm pretty sure he is the worst fighter ever. Now, okay, maybe he's a great flashy kickboxer, but he's only in the UFC because he holds Izzy's jock strap. Truly, truly just one of the worst fighters.
Yeah, man, it just wasn't it on the day. Hey, just like everything, even he's just like, as he's stumbling awkwardly towards the guy, it just wasn't it. I think, you know, when you come in, what was he like, 3-0, and now he's 0-3.
Yeah, well, he's 0-3 in the UFC. He's 3-3, and he's definitely getting cut on Monday morning. I can't wait for the roster watch bot on Twitter to give us the old fighter removed Blood Diamond. Poor guy.
Maybe Leonardo DiCaprio will pick him up since he's a Blood Diamond. maybe he'll have a new career.
Having said that, by the way, he might have the greatest discrepancy ever of a fighter with a very cool nickname versus actual fighting ability. Like, he would be in the UFC pound for pound rankings just off of fighter nicknames.
Blood, I don't know, mate.
Diamond.
No. I think that the pleasure. What is his name? The Pleasure Boy or Pleasure Man?
Pleasure Man.
Oh my god, nightmare.
So uncomfortable. Uncomfortable.
It's just a little bit gross.
Yeah, and it's not like outwardly disgusting. It's just extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like people when you say moist, right? Mm-hmm. It's just off. It's just off. It's just too much. Hey, I tell you what though, I guarantee no other UFC 293 recap podcast started with Blood Diamond and the Pleasure Man. I can tell you that as a fact. We probably should circle round to the main event, the thing that everyone's actually talking about. And, you know, every community where they order the pizza and they're playing the game and they have the different timelines, we're somehow in the Sean Strickland is the middleweight champion of the world timeline. What the fuck went wrong to get here? This is so chaotic.
Oh man, obviously, like, we're all Izzy fans here. We're Australian, and you know, we're on this side of things. But god damn, who expected this? I feel like I embrace the chaos whenever this happens. I'm always for an underdog story. I'm always up for just calamity to happen and to shake up divisions. And this is one of the biggest, craziest things to happen. And I'm just waiting for more presses, man. Like, get Sean Strickland more microphones. That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And the great thing is as well, like, people be saying, oh, you know, his life is a movie. What a story. His story's already been told in a couple of great movies. You just take American History X and then splice it into Rocky, and you've got the Sean Strickland story.
That's it. but man, he did it in fucking style, though, man. That was just like, for once, the judges did not screw someone over. Like, it was a perfect scorecard, in my opinion. And even the second, so for the second round, it wasn't even that defining as all the other rounds for Izzy. Like, obviously, he won that round, but it wasn't just like a big stonker of a round either. It was a full blowout.
Yeah, mate. It was. And there's been a lot of talk after this fight about his performance. Izzy was flat. You know, he mentioned Dana White, and he said, "Oh yeah, Izzy's going to tell me some stuff." Eugene Bearman did that weird press conference. It's extremely strange, and I'm curious to see what all comes out of it. But ultimately, Sean Strickland and his coach Eric Nosek came in with an incredible game plan, and people are talking about, well, where does this rank with upsets in UFC in history in terms of title upsets? For me, this goes down as the biggest. And the reason this goes down as the biggest is because no one wanted Sean Strickland to have this fight. And in fact, even though I actually didn't give him a chance myself, I was advocating, saying, well, who else do you want Izzy to fight? There is no one else. This fight had to be made at this time because Drickus wasn't ready. Bet Izzy's regretting forcing this fight as well, hey? But the way that it happened, he systematically over five rounds wore Izzy down, took away of all his weapons, and made him go on the back foot. Maybe statistically, odds-wise, Matt Serra knocking out GSP was the biggest upset, but he caught him. He caught GSP cold on a bad night in the first round with an overhand right from a jiu-jitsu guy that didn't really knock people out.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing that obviously comes to mind would be, you know, the Leon Edwards Kamaru Usman fight. But, you know, he was losing that fight. This is an out-stonking from start to finish.
Yeah.
You might be right in that. Obviously, you know, Alexa Grasso, Valentina Shevchenko comes to mind. And you got, Nunes, one versus... Well, what's her name now? She's lost against her in the second. So now
she's extremely memorable. Juliana Pena.
We all love Juliana Pena. So obviously there's that as well, but it's still not to the caliber of what happened on this night here. And he was walking him down. Izzy wasn't able to get off his, you know, he's got these huge swinging counter shots that really, obviously worked well in the first Robert Whittaker fight. It worked well against the Alex Pereira in the second fight there as well. But that only really works if someone's throwing leather at you and they're exchanging with you and pressing forward, then he can like land those huge looping counter hooks. But Strickland stayed present, he stayed defensive, and he was striking intelligently, and he wasn't overextending ever. And he was pressing him back with teat kicks the entire time. It was just an absolute masterclass in terms of how to beat Israel Adesanya.
It certainly was. And the thing is, people don't want to admit this, but that's an incredibly difficult, unique skill set to master, because Strickland is able to do it because he has a very good boxing defense, as you said. He checked and countered on every fucking leg kick that Izzy threw, and he has the cardio to keep it up. He's a complete and utter madman with his cardio. So it was like, in retrospect, you're looking at, okay, his style is probably perfect to beat Izzy. Even Pereira, who beat him recently, didn't have the better of him. He just had ferocious, you know, vaporizing shadow realm power. Yeah, and he was able to catch Izzy towards the end of the fight, despite being outclassed. And every time Izzy loses, people want to tear him down and so on and so forth. The reality is, he's the most active champion the UFC's ever had. The guy needs a break, but you do have to question a couple of things. One, was he overlooking Sean Strickland? Because I think he confidently thought he could just batter him. And of course, Eugene Bearman said, no, we didn't overlook the guy. We gave him everything. But mentally, if Izzy's not 100% there, he's not switched on, he's thinking about other things. He was, you know, he went to about half a dozen different premieres and around Sydney of his documentary style bender. He's obviously been focused on Drickus du Plessis. It just seemed that Izzy wasn't up for it. And I'm not sure whether something went wrong on the day of the fight or whatever happened. Yeah. But he also didn't seem too devastated by it either. I wonder, because he's lost the title before and won it back. He's also been one of these guys in his losses. He's never been like, it's not the end of the world. Ultimately, it's a sport, and you win some and you lose some. Yeah. It's just been a strange reaction.
I don't know, man. The aspect there of like, you know, that taking it like a champion, you know, and like, you know, you've seen it recently with Aljamain Sterling coming out and just saying, look, better guy on the night. Great. You know, huge upset with Sugar Sean. But that's what you want to see from a champion, right? You want them to take it on the chin. You want them to, you know, to go out and respect the thing and you know, that showcases us as like, or it shows to us as fans that this is a true champion. But what doesn't work, and going back and proving it later on, having a few more fights, then you win the respect of the crowd back, even if, you know, there's a slip up in a fight. But what doesn't help is not talking at the post press conference.
Yeah, leaving that was weird.
Not talking any, not saying anything, leaving the cage. It just sort of seems. It seems like he's running away from it. Whereas even if it was an injury or something like that, it would be better for your legacy as a champion. If you're looking to get it back, is to win the crowd back. And by doing it by taking it on the chin and having that chat and giving us some information. So I don't know. It left a bit of a weird taste in my mouth for him not to chat about it in the post.
Yeah, especially because he sort of left breadcrumbs of something. He said to Dana, who then brought that up in the press conference, and Eugene said the same thing as well, that he will talk at the appropriate time. So, well, no, the appropriate time is in the press conference after the fight. Yeah, like that's now. Really, really strange. But, you know, he's always, I guess he's sort of always done things his own way, and I guess time will tell to see whether he comes up with an excuse or, you know, however he's able to explain away this performance. But the interesting thing is, Dana White's like, yeah, we're just going to run it back. It's like, these guys do not want Sean Strickland to stay champion, it would seem. Although, after they take a look at the social numbers in the next couple of days, they might actually be happy because his numbers are exceeding Sean O'Malley's on the UFC YouTube channel. Like Sean Strickland is a star without trying to be one. It's it's very strange. He's magnetic for a lot of people.
And yeah, he's meth Jesus, man. He's coming in strong. It's I'm all for it. I'm all for the chaos. And when he said immediate rematch straight away after, you know, losing two of his last three, I don't know, man. Like, obviously, they've got the Drickus and Israel fight that's been set up for ages, and that still should be a thing. So maybe they're still trying to push towards that. But I don't know if that.
But they can still make that fight as a Fight Night Africa. He doesn't need to be the champion. And in fact, you could argue that what they're fighting for, the King of Africa, is bigger than the UFC belt.
Maybe so that's what Israel was concentrating on instead of the Sean Strickland in front of me. He was just planning on how many times he can call Drickus the N-word again.
But that's what I mean. That fight, the narrative completely sells itself. And they could, but I suppose from the UFC's perspective, Izzy's a pay-per-view star. They're never going to make that fight without putting it as a pay-per-view. But that is one of the rare fights that they could have a headline of a pay-per-view without a championship belt on the line. And sometimes for whatever reason, you get one or two a year where that might happen. For example, obviously we had Nate Diaz versus Chimaev, which turned into Nate Diaz versus Tony Ferguson, which was a non-title pay-per-view event. And there's a few others every now and again. So that they could keep that in the back pocket. But possibly the biggest loser in all of this is Drickus Du Plessis. No one wants to see Drickus fight Sean Strickland. There's no narrative there. It's just not an exciting fight. And he didn't show up to Australia. He didn't make himself visible. And meanwhile, you got Khamzat Chimaev, who's about to rip the neck off of Paulo Costa because Paulo just doesn't have the cardio to keep up with him whatsoever. So assuming Chimaev makes his middleweight debut in about a month's time, month and a half's time in Abu Dhabi, rips the head off of Paulo Costa, punches his face through the fucking octagon mat and says, take that secret juice. And then he gets on and says, I'm coming for the belt. I want it. Sean Strickland, I'll destroy you. All of a sudden, there's a compelling narrative. Khamzat's one of the biggest stars the company's got to fast-track him to a title. Izzy probably wants a bit of time off. He's going to be exhausted. All of a sudden, Drickus is going, well, I want the Izzy fight. I've got to set, you know, this is what I'm after. And no one wants to see Dricus du Plessis versus Sean Strickland. There's no narrative there.
No. Because as you were saying before, like, you know, we're in this weird timeline at the moment, but this actually might be one of the more, you know, exciting timelines. Because what have we seen in the last few years? Israel just, like, you know, running through the same people over and over again, just establishing dominance, cycling through, much like Kamaru Usman cycled through the top of his division. It's for the fans, for the people that watched it for a long time, or indeed even just new fans, it's exciting to see different shit happen. And this is why we love this sport, because wild shit happens like this all over the place. And yeah, I think it's just, I think it's fucking awesome. I think you're right though, like having come through and you know, sparking a little bit more just new opportunities for matchups in this division. And he's a star. He's coming through. He's ruthless. You've got Strickland, who's outspoken and crazy. Paulo Costa's sort of, you know, been in and out, and you know, but obviously he's a character online. And then you've just got, you know, the skills of Israel as well. So if he can get back in there, oh man, there are so many cool fights coming up now because of the way things are played out.
100%. And you know, you got Bo Nickel knocking on the door of the top 15. Mm-hmm. He's going to be in there very soon. You got Paul Craig making waves down there. And all of a sudden, movement at the top of the division means more opportunities. And if Israel takes 6 to 8 months off, all of these other guys are going to start fighting each other and avenues open up for different things to happen. So it's just chaotic. I don't think this changes Israel's legacy whatsoever. In fact, it gives him the opportunity to come back and win the belt for a third time, or maybe permanently move up to light heavyweight. Who knows? But you certainly can't begrudge the guy now taking some time off. And let's just relish Sean Strickland. And I really hope that they don't do an immediate rematch, or if they do, Sean Strickland gets an obscene amount of money for making that happen, and they can run it back in Las Vegas. And, you know, let's see what happens with there.
Yeah, let's get him out of that Hyundai or whatever he's driving. He's talking about.
He's never going to change. Sean Strickland is only ever going to buy used cars. Like,
I love it.
That's a guy who's only ever, you know, ever buying used cars. But he was hilarious. He was great in the embedded. He was loving going around Sydney. He had become a bit of the people's champ. So many people were like psyched to see him. Like, holy shit, Sean Strickland, let's take a photo. Da, 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 da. He seems to be like a real human being when his girlfriend's around him as well. She's clearly a great influence on him. It's great to see. And I'm just enjoying the chaos that is Sean Strickland being the middleweight champion. Like, who'd have thought? It's absolutely brilliant. It just goes to show mad shit happens in this sport every single week. It's truly good. Let's move on to the co-main Tai Tuivasa.
Our boy, he looked good though. Like in the embedded, he's looking trim, he's looking fitter, he's looking stronger. But he's coming up against Drogo, this absolute specimen of a human. What is he? 6'7", 6'6"?
He's monstrous. He's
technical. He's got mad kicks, and obviously he's taken a few things out of Cyril Garn's book, and he was getting to the body again. And I just think, he was just a bit more technically sound. And obviously, Tai was actually playing a good plan and being a bit more sound himself. He wasn't just swanging and banging from the get go.
Yeah,
that actually might have served him a little bit better. And you know, I don't know.
I think if it was going to be if it was going to go down to technique, Volkov was always going to win this, and it would require Tai to put him on his back foot, get inside close, and land an overhand to try and take him out. Also, monstrous body shot. The leg kick seemed to be working well for Tai, but ultimately, we love Tai. Everyone loves Tai. He's a people's favorite. He's the people's champion. He does the shoeies. He's good crack. Now it's just 3 losses in a row. Heavyweight MMA, it happens. He's probably still not in his prime. But between the beer company, the apparel company, like, I don't think Tai Tuivasa is long for fighting anymore. He loves scrapping, but I think if he keeps getting beaten up, and he took some licks, he took some shots, he's probably going to end up walking away. I hope it's not too soon. I hope the UFC starts to feed him guys outside the top 10 now. Let's start bringing in some Latvian taxi drivers for Tai Tuivasa, like they do in boxing, and they build up. Let's just get some fucking bin man out of the crowd, some fat geezer who throws down in a car park, and have Tai Tuivasa just tee off on them and just really build his confidence back up. Because Tai, after he beat Derek Lewis, was like, that was, he was just
King of the world, baby.
King of the world. You knock out Derek Lewis and you're just this is one of the scariest men ever. And the reality is, I don't think he was ever, you know, he was never going to be champion. He's never going to be elite. He's just too limited in his technique. And I'll be honest, in the Unbedded, I'm sure he's training at other places, but it didn't exactly look like the place he was training at. He was training at a fucking CrossFit studio with a guy holding pads. Like, what was that?
I have no idea, man. It's like, we see, you know, Volkov going through all his, like, you know, his therapy and meditation therapies and things like that. And, you know, it's all looking quite high tech and everything like that. And then you just go to the Crunch studio right there, you know, and I don't know, man. But I wouldn't have surprised me if he did knock out Volkov. Obviously, he's taken out Stefan Struve before. Massive, you know, he's managed to reach up there and get him, but... I think Volkov's a lot obviously better than Stefan Struve, and I think he's beaten him in the past as well. But he used his range so well. He kept him on the outside. He didn't give him an opportunity to do what Ty does best, which is swang and bang. And it's just a bit of a shame. We all want to see more Ty to Tuivasa. So I hope he sticks around for a bit longer. But as you said, just give him some opponents that. Maybe aren't quite as unrelenting as
give him, you know what we should do next, give him that fucking Marcos Rogério de Lima who Derek Lewis just murdered.
Give him that guy.
He's still top 15, so it's still a name for Ty. Or give him has he fought Marcin Tybura? Ty Tuivasa,
not sure.
Let's see.
Just don't give him Aspinall. He'll just,
tear
all the ligaments in all of his knees.
Yeah, no, he hasn't. So that's another guy in the top 15. Okay. He hasn't fought. But the thing is, Ty's done this before. He lost three in a row, and then he peeled off a 5-win winning streak. He's clearly found his level. He's not a top 8 heavyweight, and that's okay. That's fine. He's still a fun guy. He can still make a living knocking dudes out. But let's just be smart with the matchmaking.
Everyone's tuning in to watch every time he comes in, right? I mean, everyone's keen for a beer when Ty Tuivasa's in the room. He's never not going to sell tickets if he's on a card, right? So, it's just I think we just need to be careful with him and just understand where he's sitting right now. I hope he can pick things back up. He's still young, but the fact is he's in the heavyweight division, and these guys, you're going against a Pavlovich who hits like a god of thunder, and. I don't even know where he's from, but like, goddamn, it, like, one punch from that guy, you're taking a few years off your life per strike. So I don't know how age plays into the heavyweight game if you're taking strikes from these guys.
That's the thing. He's only 30. He just turned 30. Yeah. But he's taken some serious some serious damage, and he's older than us.
He's older than us. What the fuck are we doing with our lives? Hey, what are we doing?
You mean younger?
Yeah, well, he's younger than us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. He's. What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Ty's winning. Anyway. Right. What else happened on this card? A few different bits and pieces. Mano Kapp had a good win. Short notice opponent, but he's just keeping the beef alive with Kaikara France. Hopefully, we see that fight happen, and it would be great to see Mano Kapp get knocked out. That 100%. Would be a.
Well, Felipe did great in that fight, actually. He had a great showing. He was countering well. He had like some very quick kicks coming up on every counter. He was swinging. It's his UFC debut as well. So I think he had a good showing. His stock did not drop.
Remember the guy who came in on short notice and fought. Who did he fight? It was. It was against the Russian guy, and he almost submitted him, and then he went to decision.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Can't remember.
Was that? Oh my gosh, this is great podcasting. Just trying to remember guys' names. It wasn't. Was it Armin Sarukian? Yeah, it was. Was it? I don't know. No, it wasn't Armin Sarukian. I forget who it was now. Doesn't matter. But it was
the point is,
expected to win.
It's wonderful to see a showcase from someone in their debut, especially someone who he's coming on a short notice as well. Obviously,
that's it.
you know, what can like the UFC has to reward these people, but like, you know, for taking these fights and for showcasing something great like that, and maybe just give them an easier edge into their second fight, and or like, you know, something challenging or something that's going to put their name up if they are as skilled as this guy. So I was happy watching that fight actually, and but you know, they made the right decision in the end. I think Cap took it.
Yeah, I agree. Justin Taffer, that was unbelievable.
Austin Lane is a fucking giant and a specimen of an athletic human being, and Justin Taffer punched a freaking hole through the guy's face. He has the spirit of the ancestors wrapped around in that man's fist. It is insane the power that these guys generate.
Dude, absolutely insane. Like he played a little bit in the NFL, so that sort of measures you how good of an athlete he was. Okay, he played a handful of snaps. I think he spent time on practice squad and things, so he's never like a bona fide star or anything like that. But nonetheless, 6'6", 243 pounds, just moves different. But you know, when you're getting hit by Justin Taffer, it doesn't matter how athletic you are, you're getting hit. Man. You're getting hit with the biggest cement brick paws ever. And he also had all of that built up fury about the fact that Austin Lane gave him an internal brain checkup with his index finger.
You just don't want to get penetrated by a guy who's 6'6". But especially being a guy in the UFC. But goddamn, I was almost thinking that he was going to do the Mark Hunt walk off, but there was like this second of hesitation before he rained down eternal hellfire on this man's face. It was fucking stunning.
Dude, it was like a split second before he was like, oh yeah, I got him. I'm about to walk off. He's like, wait a minute. No, you gouged the shit out of my eye.
Yeah.
Screw you. I'm taking this out on you in a major, major way. You know what? I don't like to say it, but you know what fight is going to happen eventually.
Well, one of our boys against one of our boys, right? Or he's going to have to fight. You say it.
He's going to end up fighting. He's going to end up. No, he's going to end up fighting Tai Tuivasa.
Nah.
Like they're going to match Taffer versus Tuivasa, and they'll probably be like, "All right, fuck it, let's do it." Like in a couple of years' time.
You know,
Justin Taffer's older. Like yeah, they'll probably like, yeah, let's punch on, let's do it, let's see.
Yeah. Well, you know what I like about these guys is like there's such a cool energy about them. Like they're so family orientated, they're so kind, they're so nice, they just seem like the coolest people to be around. And then when you get them in the cage, they look kind of just like, you know, they're chilling, they're flowing, and then they have just striking power, like, you know, like no other person on the planet can generate. It is unfucking believable, just going from that friendly loveliness to absolute death and war.
I couldn't agree more. Holy shit, dude. Justin Taffer is only 29 years old. He'll turn 30 later this year.
Fucking hell. He's, well,
I thought he was much older than that, because obviously his brother Junior Taffer is also in the UFC. But I thought he was a lot older than that. And that was his first performance of the night bonus as well. He's got some pretty sick knockouts. But yeah, this one was it. And let's be honest. His brother as well, we know what they are. His brother's probably got a bit more potential. He's younger, a bit more athletic, better body type. We know what Justin Taffer is. He's Mark Hunt Jr. Don't put him in there with wrestlers. Don't put him in there with grapplers. That's not what we need to see.
Mm-hmm.
Just put him in there with people who want to swang and bang, and let's see what happens. So, you know,
exactly.
He's a blue belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, apparently. So, come on.
Right. Yep, put him on the ground. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll be that's a way to sell pay-per-views. Don't. Just like we see, like, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, put him up against a striker, you know.
Exactly.
But we also got Tyson Pedro, who was looking good.
He was, man. It was good to see him get a win.
It was kind of nice seeing how His striking style was like they in City Kickboxing, they have this Izzy does this quite a lot, and it's just like this side to side movement parrying, like when they're setting up strikes. And I think he's taken on a little bit of that style now, and it looks a little bit cleaner, his striking. It's not just straight 1-2s. He's sort of almost flowing a little bit more with his striking, which I saw, and a lot of really good straight punches. He's, you know, utilizing his jab a lot in this fight. So yeah, he's just looking cleaner, which is probably what he needs to do to continue, you know, surging upwards and not, you know, missing the boat on success, because I think he deserves it.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got some weird losses in the UFC, some good wins, and he just needs to string a few together now. He's going to be 32 years old, and you think, okay, if he's going to make a good run of it in the light heavyweight division, that needs to start now, and needs to start putting them together. Hopefully, get another fight in early next year. He's going to have plenty of opportunities to fight in Australia, but don't limit yourself. Get on a plane, go and see what happens against some other guys inside the 205 pound division, and let's make a proper run at things. Mm-hmm. What else? Oh, Jack Jenkins, man, that
don't like to see it. I hate watching those gruesome goddamn injuries. Anything where it goes the wrong way, it ain't for me. But I just feel so bad for anytime I see a mullet and a mustache on a man, I'm betting on that man. You know, there's a certain amount of power that comes from, you know, like a poor haircut and VB and bad decisions. And like this guy he was looking good, but yeah, man, it was pretty grim.
I mean, yeah, like you said, he was looking good. Hopefully he's not out for sort of longer than a year with this, ideally 4 or 5 months, and he can get back. And I think the UFC likes him. I think they've seen his talent. This was his third fight inside the UFC. I'm not sure what his contract situation is. Hopefully they're able to negotiate a new contract. But yeah, he jumped on socials and tweeted out that he dislocated his elbow. There's no breaks. Great. He needs an MRI now. MRI to see if there's any ruptured tendons. And if that's the case, he would need surgery. Best case scenario, no surgery, and just needs to wait for the swelling to come down. So let's see. Hopefully it's not a career debilitating injury, because once you start rupturing ligaments and things like that, shit gets wacky and injuries start to recur and so on and so forth. So,
but, we'll just wish him a speedy recovery. Hey, I think he'll be back and, surging forward. Yeah, goddamn. Carlos, sexy tickets, please. Ulberg was looking.
Yes.
His jab was looking good. His cardio was looking good as well. So good on him. He's obviously showed some improvements. And what did you think about the switch up at the end? Obviously, the horn went, and then they took it back and made it a submission victory.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Yeah, they found the sneaky tap. I mean, that's good. It's great for It's great for Carlos Ulberg. Obviously, he doesn't get a finish bonus, but it's always good to have on your record and keep your finish percentage high.
What do you think about that? After, because obviously when you look on the UFC, it says submission now instead of decision. When the horn goes and the ref doesn't see it, and then they call it a submission afterwards, what do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, the tap happened, right? So the tap happened, we got to the right outcome. I think that's what matters. And so also, it wasn't, maybe Jung Don could have felt a little bit more hard done by if he'd been dominating the fight,
yeah,
and then it was in the last second, and then but he got dominated for the entire fight. He got dropped a few times. And I thought that was what was really impressive about Carlos Ulberg's performance, is that he didn't put himself in any danger, and he didn't gas himself out. Like he was just lighting him up, and it was clear that the finish would come. He almost ran out of time, but ultimately dropped him and was able to get the finish. And so, you know, patience, maturity, didn't chase after anything. And yeah, I think it's a really good sign for Ulberg. Peeled off 5 wins in a row now. He's in, you know, in this light heavyweight division, and I think it's quite clear. If you say, you know, they've been training together, they've clearly got a relationship. But if you go Carlos Ulberg or Tyson Pedro, who's going to go further? To me, it seems nailed on that Carlos Ulberg is the better fighter, and it's going to end up having the better UFC career when it's all said and done. So yeah, let's. I'd be very excited. I'm very excited to see where he goes next. And yeah, this was his first opportunity. in the UFC to fight on this side of the world. So it was nice for him to get a finish, right. Probably had a bunch of fans over from New Zealand. Yeah, awesome stuff from Carlos Ulberg. Again, you know, just not fair. He's just...
Yeah.
We are not the same species. Carlos Ulberg and I... And like, we do not belong in the same category.
God was showing off when they made him, and they were just having a laugh when they made me. And it's unbelievable. It's just like a different species. Hey, must be nice. We got Jamie Malarkey back in the good old win column. He's won two of his last three now, I think.
I think Jamie Malarkey was very, very, surprised. Very lucky.
Yes,
to get that. That was a. Now, I wouldn't say it was a bent decision or anything like that, but that was the crowd cheering him on. That was the judges getting probably affected. Obviously, the first round went to Jamie. Second round went to John McDessie. And the third round was close. I just think if you're looking at, you know, you're looking at damage and all that, but, you know, we could sit and spend an hour just on every judge decision, which is extremely fucking boring. But Jamie Malarkey, he needed a win. He needed a win because... Okay, he's only winning by decisions, and then he's getting knocked out in brutal fashion as well. And when you start getting knocked out in brutal fashion and you can't string together wins, your UFC's career is going to be over. He manages to be, he gives his agent some leverage now and goes, no, keep him around. Let's get him a good matchup. He got a win.
It's just a bit of a mess in that one as well, because it was a unanimous decision as well. I'm like, I don't know. If anything, it probably should have been a split, in my opinion. And like, you know, if the scoring criteria being damage, you look at McDessie's face and you look at Jamie Malarkey's face, you're like, who did the more damage? But you know, that being said, he did a lot of leg kicks. So Jamie Malarkey was countering a lot of, like, they were both throwing down in that fight, so it could have gone either way. I think it is a pretty close call, but you know, we're always happy to see an Aussie in the win column. So let's hope he keeps it up and doesn't gain any more scar tissue, because god damn,
did he bleed so easily. It's unbelievable.
So much blood that just comes out of that. Like, that guy's eyebrow, it is just like, I don't know what it was, but there's like a white tinge on the top of his eyebrows, and I don't know if they're just lubing him up like crazy to make sure it doesn't.
No, I think that's scar tissue.
That's Jesus Christ.
It's like I don't watch much of Bill Burr's Netflix show F is for Family.
Yeah.
But they got the Irish boxer there, and typical, like, they always set him up as like the Great White Hope fighting a black guy, and they put him on, like, I think it's the St. Patrick's Day parade or the 4th of July parade, I forget, and he's just on a float on the parade, just waving around and smiling, and then he'll just like randomly start bleeding from his face because he's just got so much scar tissue.
I love it. Let's hope it doesn't get to like Nate Diaz level, but
I think the problem for poor Jamie Malarkey is he's 29 years old. That's a lot of scar tissue to have.
That's so early, huh? But hey, Nasrat Haqparast, he had a good fight. He is a very well-rounded fighter. I will say that. I thought that was a very good fight, like just back and forth. I don't know if you watched the last Ultimate Fighter, but that last fight where they were just trading for the champion, not the
bantamweight one, right?
Not the bantamweight one, the other one. Were they middleweights? I'm not sure. But he's just fought recently, the winner anyway. But it reminded me of that fight just because it was just like strike after strike, technical, like you could hear every punch landing. And like, you know, when you can hear it, when there's a crowd going as well, it's, it just shows that these guys are swinging with bad intentions. And I just love to see it.
Maybe I should go back and watch that fight because I didn't watch I didn't watch.
You probably thought it's just Kelvin Gastelum, like just actually doing something good, you know, okay. Like, he started off with a bunch of, praise in his early career. And then he had a few, you know, ups and downs, but I feel like he's got some time to get back on the old horse.
He loves a decision though. Holy shit. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 fights in the UFC, 9 of which have gone to decision.
Lord almighty.
Win or lose. And he's got one win by KO. He's got one stoppage win inside the UFC. Like, take some chances, Nasrat. Take some chances. Holy crap.
Yeah, he's definitely a volume machine, huh? Poor Shane Young, huh? what was it, 10 seconds, 12 seconds, something like this. I think any time you miss weight by like 4.5 pounds, that's bad. Anytime someone dyes their hair like that just before the fight, I don't know, like Dan Hooker's kind of seemed, and maybe Charles Oliveira, the only two that have kind of pulled it off and had a success, but just it was not a good look for Paul.
There's
Jane.
Absolutely no way that he stays in the UFC after this. First of all, you miss weight by that much, that nothing infuriates them more. And now he's lost 4 in a row. He drops to 13-8, and he's 2-5 in the UFC. There's not a chance Shane Young stays with the promotion.
The thing is, what kind of annoys me is, like, you see the embedded, and obviously they're trying to like hype up the thing, and they're like, you know, we're all a team here, and you know, we like to do things as a team. But that motherfucker needs to stop eating and get in the fucking sauna and lose 4.5 pounds. Like, don't be showing him having all these days out and having fun if he's
yeah, 4.5 pounds. exactly. You know, with the like top guys at City Kickboxing, it's like, you know, you got Izzy, you got Carlos Ulberg, you know, Tyson Pedro goes over, Volk goes over, mm-hmm. and then you got Shane Young. It's just like that meme of the soldiers getting ready to breach, and there's just a clown in the line. That's Shane Young. Or actually, that could be Blood Diamond as well. Like,
oh my God, yeah.
Wait, however,
3 out of 6 ain't bad, as the saying goes, right?
Yeah, man, they were gassing themselves up for a 50% win rate. I was like, all right, guys. Maybe calm down.
Yeah, association just sometimes ain't it, huh?
That's it. All right, man. I don't think there's much else to talk about on this card. We talked about Blood Diamond, and Kiefer Crosby took a short notice fight, flew across the world to get submitted. But you know, he's in the UFC now, so he might get an extra fight. But yeah.
So it just sort of seems like Ian Garry is the only Irish fighter that's really, like, you know, like having successes at the moment. What's his name? You know, shit talker from the other week on the Cyril Garn card as well.
Callum Loughran. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, there just sort of seems like, I don't know. There's like a surplus of Irish fighters coming through, and everyone's trying to, you know, talk the talk. But unless you have results and stuff like that, Ian Garry's speaking a lot of shit, but he's backing it up. And, you know, that's what's going to push you forward to success. Yeah, I don't know. That's the Fighting Irish need to step up their game. We can't just have like, you know,
they need to sort their shit out. Yeah, exactly. All right, man. We've got another fight night to look forward to. It's we got a title fight. It's a rare title fight on a non-pay-per-view, which is interesting. And they're phrasing this as UFC Noche, which I'm reliably informed is Spanish for nobody gives a fuck about this fight. And
also night, but yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Right.
It's easily Google Translate sometimes.
Google Translate. Exactly. yeah, man. It's to celebrate Mexican Independence Day, which right. I guess is not Cinco de Mayo, which everyone always says Cinco de Mayo. Mexican Independence Day. It's not. This card could have been a lot better. It was supposed to have Shavkat versus Kelvin Gastelum. It was supposed to have Santiago Ponzinibbio against Daniel Rodriguez, but he had his drug test. So that fight's been pulled. And all of a sudden, the card's looking pretty thin outside of the top two cards. Now, the co-main and the main event are interesting. Obviously, let's go with the main event first.
Yeah.
You brought this fight up before when we were talking about big upsets in UFC title fights, and Alexa Grasso beating Valentina Shevchenko certainly is up there with one of the highest, and she ends up cranking her face, and Valentina attacks in the fourth round. They get the immediate rematch because Valentina Shevchenko has been one of the most dominant champions ever in women's mixed martial arts. Certainly probably one of the pound for pound best. You know, her only blemish is on her record coming to Amanda Nunes, in the second one being a very, very questionable split decision up at 135 pounds. But she has been flawless at 125 pounds in her career up until Alexa Grasso did her thing. The question is, A, let's get a prediction from you. Is Shevchenko actually gonna manage to turn things around? And B, if that happens, Is there an immediate trilogy, or has someone else in the division sort of made their case to get in there, whether it's Aaron Blanchfield or Manon Fiorot, to to keep this, I guess, fresh blood at the top of the division rotating through.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure if Blanchfield, like, you know, had like a nice like uprising after our last fight and only just squeaking it out. I'm not really, overtly confident that's the way to go. But I would like to see. I would like to see what Valentina Shevchenko's training was like this time around, because the last time she got after she got stonked by Alexa Grasso, we were talking about this.
Dude,
she was training in some, you know, like 17th floor up, like, you know, shitty little, 13-year-old, dojang that just had like, you know, the padded floors and nothing else. It looked so amateur.
She was training in a Japanese apartment block. Like, yeah. That's like, it was insane. She was like, oh yeah, I've assembled a... It was horrific. The training partners looked terrible. The gym had zero equipment. And I understand, like, world-class athletes, but she is Valentina Shevchenko. She could be at any gym in the world. And I'm actually very curious if they release any sort of embedded or what's going on, because I don't know where she's training at the moment, but I sure as shit don't think that she's going to be training back in Japan for this one. Absolutely ludicrous.
This is what I'm thinking. Like, you know, and when it comes to my prediction, I would love to see if Valentina is actually going to take us seriously this time, because it obviously just looked like Alex Grasso was just like, she probably just took it for granted, didn't take the training as seriously. But then you look at Alexa Grasso's training camp last time. She's sparring with Brandon Moreno. She's got those slick Mexican hands, and then she chokes out Valentina. And Valentina is someone who proves time and time again that she will destroy the person at their own game. And Alexa Grasso took her out, and I don't know, man, I'm in love with Alexa Grasso. She is gorgeous. maybe I'm like, you know, this is the misogyny of me speaking, but I think Alexa Grasso has a good chance. I hope that she really does well. I'd pick Alexa Grasso for this fight. It just sort of seemed like she had a number last time. If Valentina can, you know, come back and, you know, do what she always does, it wouldn't surprise me at all. But I don't know. I think the pride of Mexico being on, you know, Mexican Independence Day, I reckon there's something there. I'll go the Grasso.
Valentina is the bookie's favorite. Just looking now, she's -170. Alexa Grasso is +140. Obviously, much shorter odds than. And if I remember, we actually watched this fight together. This was the one we watched in Serbia, right, in Belgrade.
Yeah. I think she was a -700 700 dog, Grasso.
Actually, that Airbnb you were staying in kind of looked like the facility in which Valentina Shevchenko was training, which
she should have come over.
Yeah, which says terrible things about both your Airbnb and the gym she was training in simultaneously.
Yeah, well, let's just say I had one of the more quality places, but it's Serbia, so I'm not sure how high the standards go. What do you think, mate? What do you think about this one, Alex Grasso?
I think Shevchenko comes in. I think she wins the fight, and I think they don't do a trilogy. I think they put that one on ice, and they go, okay, let's have a look at Manon Fiora, because Valentina's not fought her before. She made a statement win, had a great win over Rose Namajunas. And so she's getting to the age where, if not now, when? Let's pull up her record here. She's lost. Wow. She lost to Leah McCourt in her debut in Cage Warriors. I had no idea. That's insane. And since then, she's been perfect. She's defeated Myra Breno, defeated Myra Breno Silva, who recently had a good win over Holly Holm. She's beaten Tabitha Ritchie, and then Rose Namajunas is the sort of the biggest win of her career. Former champion, former two-time champion, of course. And so that does a lot, and I think that helps the UFC build that fight. Also, they're obviously doing great things with UFC France as well, and to be able to have a French person fight for the title in France would be insane. They're probably looking at moving that fight earlier in the year, because they've got the Olympics. Olympics next year in France, Paris 2024.
They got a lot going on then. I mean, like, you know, Cyril's just had a win. You know, we had the special forces men, like, you know, absolutely putting on a murder.
BSD,
yeah.
BSD, baby.
Oh my god!
Yeah, no, French MMA is in a great, great spot. Yeah, see, the Olympics are from late July to the middle of August, and so you go, okay, well, maybe early September they could swing it, but maybe they want to get that ahead of and go before the Olympics. Who knows? Who knows? But I think that's the fight to make if Shevchenko wins. I think it's the fight to make regardless. If Shevchenko loses, you give Fiero Alexa Grasso.
Sure.
And I'm sure the UFC is already talking about talking to Fiero and talking to Erin Blanchfield and just trying to figure out who's the right person, trying to figure out how much it's going to cost them and all of these kind of things. So I think that Fiero has got a great opportunity and probably has put out them. Really cemented herself with that kind of performance, but let's see.
In the co-main, I think these guys could have headlined a fight night just by themselves. Honestly, like I reckon that would have just sold it. Like Kevin Holland, Jack Della Maddalena. Oh, that's a wet dream. That's what that is. I love both of these fighters, man.
Me too, man. This is like I don't want either of these guys to lose, and for me. The good money is to bet on Kevin Holland. I think Kevin Holland is phenomenal. He's in his prime. I know he just came off. It seems like, I mean, we know how active he is, but doesn't it just feel like Kevin Holland literally just fought? Like it wasn't long ago.
He keeps doing this.
But then he said, "Oh, I'm going up." Yeah, he submitted Michael Chiesa at the end of July.
Yeah,
and then it's like, fuck it, I'll fight. Jack Della Maddalena in six weeks later, despite just saying, "Oh yeah, I want to go up to middleweight." And this is a massive fight for both of these guys. And I've said a few episodes ago, like this won't make or break Jack Della Maddalena's career. A loss to Kevin Holland here will be a great learning experience. He's still young. Kevin Holland's a veteran of the game. He's super slick in all areas. He's got great striking, which is where Jack thrives. He's got very, very good jiu-jitsu. He's long. He's like Randy Brown, but actually good. but actually good at fighting at the highest level. And yeah, if Jack Della wins this fight, it lets me know for real that Jack Della is serious. Losing doesn't tell me that he's not serious. But if Kevin Holland, Jack Della's got a ton of hype behind him right now. Kevin Holland winning this, especially after what he just did to Michael Chiesa, would be an incredibly impressive performance. And I'm probably going to bet on Kevin Holland because Kevin Holland's an underdog. Plus money?
It's so hard with two guys like this. You know, you've got a guy that he's riding the hype train, and yet again he's proving everyone right, basically, because it doesn't seem like Jack Della Maddalena has a lot of haters or anything like that. He just keeps showing up time and time again with impressive performances. Kevin Holland obviously is just such a slick fighter. He's had some ups and downs, but only against really top tier opponents. So it's going to be a fucking good fight, though. I don't see. Either like maybe there's a bit of clinching, but I think majority of this is going to be standing up, and it's going to be something spectacular.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, okay, he got ragdolled by Khamzat Chimaev. Everyone pretty much gets ragdolled by Khamzat Chimaev. Like, there's no shame in that. And then the loss to Stephen Thompson, he was stopped in the corner after taking damage. I think he broke his hand in that fight.
Yeah,
but also he was egotistical and wanted to just strike and give the fans a performance.
Yeah.
There were so many opportunities to shoot takedowns and he didn't do it. Ultimately he lost the fight. So he can't give him a pseudo win, but hopefully we just start to see him be a little bit smarter, but we'll see.
He's still a winner in our eyes. And I think that's what kind of matters to him. I think he's here for the love of the game. I think there's a lot of fighters like that, you know, Sean Strickland obviously being one of them. You know, he's here to fight and because he loves it and he enjoys it. And I think Kevin Holland probably just likes, you know, I think he just likes doing this. I think he's just I don't think a loss in his record really affects him whatsoever.
I think Yeah, I think you're probably right. As long as he's getting paid, he's happy. There's a few other fights on this card, as you would expect. At the moment, though, it's only a 10-fight card, and I'm wondering whether they're going to add one or two more. I haven't seen anything else added yet. Paul Rosas Jr. is looking to bounce back. He's a big favorite against Terrence Mitchell, but he looked extremely uncomfortable and out of his depth in his last fight, so probably going to sprinkle some on Terrence Mitchell. Daniel Zellhuber against Christos Giagos. Fernando Padilla, I don't even know who that is, against Kyle Nelson, who had a career-saving win at UFC 286 in Canada.
Lupi Godinez against Elise Reed. Like, so what? That's going to be one of the most boring fights on the planet. Roman Kopolov against Josh Fremd.
Yeah. I reckon that'll be all right, because Roman just come off a good win.
I was just going to say, Roman had a good win. He had a knockout win, if I recall correctly, right? Sick head kick knockout of Claudio Ribeiro. So, you know, that's three wins in a row, all by knockout. Yeah, Roman Kopolov versus Josh Fremd. Fremd will be looking to take it to the ground and try and submit him. Daniel Lacerda against Edgar Chaires. Don't know about Chaires. Obviously, probably been brought in for his heritage. Tracy Cortez is on the card against...
Oh, Yoshi. Look at that. Maybe she'll showcase whatever training she's been doing with Paulo Costa, huh? See, maybe the Brian Ortega...
I wanted to come out to some like Taylor Swift, like, I don't need you... bullshit relationship. Those two were like fucking 12-year-olds on social media after they broke up. Old deadbeat dad Brian Ortega just found another way to not spend time with his children. And Tracy Cortez was just like, oh yeah, I'm with Paulo Costa now, even though that was allegedly a rumor. Remember the rumors were that Tracy Cortez was pregnant and like she pulled out of a fight and it was like, she's pregnant. And I was like,
oh my God. Nope. The secret juice is real.
The secret juice is real.
It's a different secret juice. It's just, all in all, I think we got two really good fights on this card. Four that you'd want to tune in for. The rest is kind of take it or leave it. So let's hope things sort of like bounce
up. I'm actually curious about France. Yeah, well, of course we have. We're always surprised if we don't know shit about fuck.
Funny that.
But I want to see what the odds are. Tracy Cortez is the favorite. Oh my God. Tracy Cortez is the favorite. Jasmine Jezavicius had a great performance. I will be betting Jasmine Jezavicius because, I don't think Tracy Cortez is very good.
Well, you know, I don't know, you see a record of 10-1, like, you know, you'd assume that it's good, but then you look at the people that she's fought and you're like,
You look at the absolute. I mean, she's somehow, having said this, though, her win over Erin Blanchfield has aged well. Although I must admit, I didn't watch that fight and it was a split decision in Invicta. And so you go, was that just stupid judging? It's entirely possible. And then I also look and go, oh, she has two stoppage wins in her career out of the 10 wins. And her, you know, she lost her debut. But to be honest, man, I'm not impressed by her records. Like Stephanie Egger, are you kidding me? Like, this is what we're supposed to be impressed by. Pretty sure she's retired at this point. She's 8-4. Oh, no, Stephanie Egger, but she's 8-4. Justine Kish, split decision. Melissa Gatto / Ghetto. I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's just we'll give it a watch. Let's hope some cool stuff happens. I mean, for the card that we just watched, obviously those it seemed to me just like, you know, watching the main. I watched the main card first the day after. Oh, by the way, I was on a bus watching in the first round when he knocked Izzy down, and I went, "Bah!" Like just I screamed out loud, and everyone on the bus looked at me, and I was just like, I almost it was like a scream and a bark at the same time, and I had to shut the fuck up after that.
Everyone's like, there's another one of these lunatic crackheads on public transport.
Oh, speaking of which, just on the Sean Strickland thing, like I was thinking about this before. What do you think is the best prerequisite for MMA? It's probably wrestling 1, high functioning autism 2,
without a doubt.
Then kickboxing probably, right? Or maybe boxing. I'm not sure.
I think like tied into that is just like extreme childhood trauma.
Oh yeah, of course.
Like that's maybe the number one base. Whether it's inflicted on you by a close family member. There's Sony jokes. I mean,
it's all happening for him. And I'm here. I'm riding the train. I'm all for the chaos. So let's hope that it continues. Huh?
So if you know what we're taking out of this, if you are a parent, begin to neglect your child emotionally, abuse them physically, and then one day come back into their lives when they're UFC champion and start to say sorry.
If you want your child to be a champ, do it.
Exactly.
Thank you, parent listeners.
Exactly. That's and that's what you should want for your children. You should want them to be champions. So how do you get there? Abuse. Neglect them.
wee bit of abuse. All right, what else we got, mate?
That's it, buddy. We're going to wrap things up, getting out of here. Thank you, everyone who's tuned in and listened. If you aren't already, make sure you go ahead and subscribe on YouTube, on iTunes, give us 5 stars, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Google, Amazon, wherever you listen to your pods, give us a review. Make sure you subscribe. We want to keep getting the goodness in your feed. You can follow me on Twitter at LewisGloverMMA. You can follow Jamie on Instagram at Jamie Trezellian.
That's it. Don't do that.
There's only one of them at Jamie Trezellian. Punchdrunk at PunchdrunkPod on Instagram, at PunchdrunkPod_ on Twitter. Go ahead. If you're just listening audio, please go over to the YouTube and subscribe. You will find us. You'll find a link on Twitter. You'll find it when we tweet this out. You'll find it on Instagram. Whatever you need to find us, go and follow us on YouTube. That would be great. But yeah, man, this was awesome. Thank you for stepping up, and I look forward to talking about some more fights with you soon, bud.
Absolutely, mate. All right. Enjoy, guys. Nice. Thanks for listening.
Bye.